who are awarded over a year ago, and that was for a transportation 15-passenger seat van. We were awarded, but we still haven't received the dollars, and there was a lot of issues that was beyond me, but they were getting worked out and being worked out. But since then, we did have a layoff in July. This is our second one since 2018. We are meeting ourselves coming and going, I'm sure, like most departments are. And especially with COVID, it is, we take people to get tested that's been exposed. We deliver, we pick up meds, we deliver PPE to those families. I mean, we're staying very busy. This in our program plan, I wrote it to revert back to the main mainstays of the program that we kind of do routinely, just because there's only three of us, and it's been overwhelming, but we're managing.
Thank you. Thank you, Crystal. Thank you, Congresswoman Stabler. Committee members or any other members of Congress have anything they'd like to input? Okay, hearing none, does the committee want to move on?
Yes, Chair, I would say let's move on.
Thank you, Congresswoman Stabler. So, we will move on to the next item on the agenda. Ms. Standing Bear, if you'd like to stay on, that would be fine, or if not, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Chair. Have a good afternoon.
You too. So our next three items on the agenda, the director is Ms. Jennifer Oberle, and I believe you are here, Ms. Oberle. Yes, you are. And if we want to start with constituent services, we can go there. Good afternoon, Mrs. Oberle, Jennifer, and glad you're with us. And if you want to open the floor for you to make an opening statement and then jump right into your budget.
Great, thank you. I appreciate you guys being able to have these committees remotely and, you know, keeping everybody's safety while still trying to conduct the business. I think our department in particular understands how difficult that can be. Starting off with constituent services, this budget has pretty much remained the same. We have the same three positions currently. No changes have been made to those. We did cut out pretty much any kind of travel or airfare out of this budget just due to, you know, COVID and restrictions. Other than that, it's the pretty basic budget, same as we had last year, just to cover basic operating expenses.
Okay, committee or members of Congress, any questions or comments?
Chair Lemon.
Yes, Mr. Tillman, go ahead.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Jennifer Oberle. Glad you could join us and take this time to, you know, reviewing your budget. Have your indirect costs, are they the same this year as they were last year?
That is part on the budget. They do that percentage automatically, so I'm not sure if that percentage for indirect costs went up or not.
Okay. But Jordan, could you see if that was consistent with last year? If it's close to the same amount total, I just wondered if the IDC rate remained the same as well.
It's almost identical. It increased by $235.
Okay. That's all I had, Jennifer. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Dallas. I have one question.
Yes, ma'am. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. How are you today?
Good. Thank you for asking.
I was just wondering what the equipment rental for $3,780 is.
That goes to the coffee machine and the upkeep, the monthly cost for that, and then, of course, all the ink and everything that goes along with that rental.
Okay, thank you. I don't have any other questions other than that, Chairwoman.
Thank you, Congresswoman Goodfox.
Chair, this is Stabler.
Yes, Ms. Stabler, please go ahead.
Thank you. Crystal, can you maybe go through, I know we're looking at your tribal budget and discussed it a little bit, but really like to know how your numbers are going for dealing with COVID and dealing with the COVID projects that are going on with constituent services.
Constituent services, just that particular part, doesn't really have any extra COVID projects. Most of those were tied to other federal programs that we have inside financial assistance. As far as the LIHEAP, they got supplemental funds, and so did the voucher program, which is now moved back to housing. That got supplemental funds. And then in our 477, we got some supplemental funds there and our CSBG. But as far as constituent services go, that program is just the tribal budget that just basically pays those wages. And then they do, you know, all the tribal programs, which is the burial and the health benefit.
How about your emergency services money?
Okay. That's actually in the next budget. Are we good to move on? Do you want me to move on?
No, we can wait if Chair would like, whichever.
If nobody has any further questions, we can move on to the other budgets. If nobody has any further questions on the constituent services piece that's in front of us. Okay, so hearing none, we'll move on. Ms. Soberly,
okay, the next budget, that is our financial assistance budget. That is the one that contains our direct services line, which, you know, normally everybody calls the crisis program. We have almost completely exhausted that fund for this year. And then our wages for the youth services that don't qualify, that's the work program for the youth services that don't qualify for the federal grant. And so those two have stayed the same. They're at the same funding levels that we had last year. Again, we did receive, back to Ms. Stabler's question, we did receive some additional funds with our 477 to help with the work program. But again, there are limits to who can qualify for that. So we have always supplemented with tribal funds so that we can allow all the Osage youth that want to have that experience and be able to work. We do it with federal or with tribal funds for those that don't meet the federal requirements.
Did that answer your question, Ms. Stabler?
Yes, but I'm also still looking, and it's probably not in any of these budgets, but I'm still looking for how many recipients we had through your either crisis dollars or even your federal dollars for the COVID.
Okay, no, unfortunately, I don't have that data in front of me. That is, that can be provided at a later date. We have all that information. It's within our CRM program, but I can definitely run some reports and get that over to Congress.
That would be great. I would appreciate that.
Would you like to continue to follow up, Ms. Stabler?
I have nothing at the moment. Somebody else.
Okay. The floor is open for comments or questions from committees or any other members of Congress. Pardon me. We're currently speaking about the financial assistance piece?
Hello?
Yes, I'm sorry. Who is, Miss, is that Speaker Pratt?
Yeah, I've been, I don't know if my microphone's working well. Okay. To sort of follow up with Congresswoman Stabler's comments and requests, I would also like that some information on, I'm curious, in the financial services program, how many applications you receive, how many are approved, how many are denied, and how much money you typically have left over in federal monies each year. And also the youth services, like how much money is it left from that? And is that something that could be used throughout the year, or is it used throughout the year for?
Okay, with the youth services in particular, we will probably have some left over from this year due to COVID. Our program started late, so we had to shorten the program. Typically, we use every dollar that we are allotted. We plan it that way. Whenever we go in, we try to put as many as we can that, you know, qualify into the federal side. And then what's left, you know, we divide that out. And that is our basis for deciding how many weeks the program can run, how many hours they can get per week. We always go into the season looking at that. We look at how much money we have available, and then we try to make it stretch as far as we can so that we can serve everybody that applies. The last 2 years, we've been able to do that successfully. Every youth that has wanted to work and has done, you know, filled out the full application, we've been able to put in a spot and fully fund them. So typically, we go through every dollar we receive on that program. Does that answer your question?
Yes, because so if you don't have any money left, then you wouldn't be able to do that. But is that an option to continue to use it, or is it only for certain? Is it only summer, or is that an option to continue throughout the year if you had money left over?
If we had funds now through the federal side, that is an option. It can go year round. Again, if we go back to funding limits for the ones. The Osage children that don't qualify for that, we have never had enough funds to be able to run any longer than just, you know, the summertime program, because we do use every bit of that funding in those usually 6 to 7 weeks because we get so many that apply. We've also done surveys with the kids the last 2 years and asked them, you know, their preferences or what they wanted, if they wanted a year-round program, if they just wanted the summer, if they wanted both. They overwhelmingly answer they just want the summer. Again, not every kid answers that way, but usually it's about 70 to 75% just want the summer program. So that's where we try to stick the bulk of our dollars, since that's the bulk of the need.
Okay, great.
Thank you, Congresswoman Pratt. The floor remains open for any questions or comments.
Chair, this is Paula again.
Yes, ma'am.
Since you're going to be sending some information over to us, I really would like to see whatever statistics you have on clients served in your programs. I know you run a number of programs, and I know you serve a lot of people, but I think it would be really a good report to be able to see that information. And so when you provide that other information, if you would also include your participant numbers or client serve numbers, however you are calculated.
Yes, we typically do provide that. It's always in our yearly report as well. And we break that down to, you know, number of families served, number of applicants, approved, not approved, how much money we've spent. Sometimes we get into further demographics. We try to break down the crisis to show, you know, which elements were the biggest needs or what was asked for the most. And then all, you know, our CWAS-UB program, we kind of break it down into, you know, try to get more demographics on those kids and what activities, you know, they spent the most money on. So we do track all that data.
And we do report that to executive, so that's the, it can be easily transferred or sent to you guys.
That would be great, because we don't see that information. That would be great.
Congresswoman Lemon?
Yes, Speaker Pratt?
Okay, yeah, to follow up, I agree. There's so much in that program, and obviously that's an area of where we want to make sure there is enough assistance, and so it would be good to have those numbers. So how about, well, she's heard, but I maybe you could follow up with an email. I didn't, you know, like she mentioned a survey. I was just curious if there are any other surveys. So I would like to, like a copy of the survey that she just, Ms. Oberle just mentioned regarding the summer youth or the youth worker program, youth employment, excuse me. And if there are other surveys available, I would like to, for us, the Congress, to receive those as well, please. Thank you.
Okay, Speaker Pratt, you did fade out there for a moment. So did you ask if I could follow up with an email with the request for the items that you and Congresswoman Stabler have mentioned?
Yes, please.
Okay, yes, I'd be glad to do that, to follow up with an email. Communication, and if you all think of any other idea, you know, information that you would like, please forward it via email to me, that so that I can include it in an all encompassed email.
Sorry to interrupt, Chair. I also believe we submitted some reports. I know on burial, and I believe crisis. I believe those were submitted to Jordan earlier this month. So he may have some of that information, not all of it as well. But you know, he may be able to at least give you the start of what we submitted, and then we can work on, you know, any other reports that you guys would like.
Thank you, Ms. Oberle. If nobody has any questions concerning the financial assistance piece of it, I just would like, I have a couple of questions, Ms. Oberle. I do know that you have had an influx of individuals due to many being in crisis and needing financial assistance for various reasons. And of course, the overlooming, always there, pandemic that we've been living through now. So can you just kind of share a little bit with us and the listening audience on the some of the obstacles that you guys have overcome with that you've seen with some of our people or some of our constituents, and how you've been able to assist them? Of course, not giving any names, but just some examples. I think it's always good to hear some positive whenever we're visiting about things that are as an overall negative type of atmosphere. So anyways, I was just wondering if you'd like to share any successes and obstacles that you guys have that the department has overcome.
Sure, that would be great. It has been a very, very trying few months for us. You know, even during the shutdown, our office was fully functioning at all times. We did have to work with skeleton crews, and we did have to do, you know, some telework, but we did maintain service levels, and we made sure every call, every email, you know, everybody, you know, continued to be served throughout that time. We did have to get some, you know, had to be inventive on how we did certain activities. We've had to actually go out into the community even during the shutdown, whereas we were unable to, you know, have them come in, fill out apps. We would have to go deliver people apps. You know, we've gone to grocery stores, picked up groceries for them, delivered when they were doing a lot, you know, with the box food giveaways. We would always go in our van. We would pick everybody's up, you know, for our TANF families and our needy families, just because transportation is always an issue for them. So we would pick those up for them on Friday
and then we would go deliver them, you know, to their houses just so they didn't have to leave and didn't have to worry about transportation, but that they were still able to get, you know, everything that they needed. We were also able, due to them loosening up some of the federal guidelines, we were able to increase everybody's monthly benefit for those families that were on TANF so that they were able to get, you know, more income that they normally get just to help cover those gaps, you know, because the kids were home, because some were unable, you know, to work. They did not have to do their participation hours that they normally have, just again, because we would, you know, the priority was for them to be safe rather than, you know, meet some arbitrary, you know, participation guidelines. The biggest challenge I think we've had just within our department is we also took on, you know, the CARES program, you know, which is giving out the funding to all Osages. That has really just put a strain just on our staff and the people that, you know, we have, because everybody still calls, you know, the main number. They're still calling our staff, you know, even though we were able to finally get that department fully staffed, everybody still comes directly to us. So it's still a daily routine of us answering those emails, answering those phone calls, greeting people as they come in, you know, the faxes, you know, coming through and all of that. So that's been a big load just on top of the increase that we've already seen just through regular clients and regular walkthroughs. The other thing we just did recently too was we always have, you know, we give out during the LIHEAP program at our energy assistance, and we try to give out those winterization kits. We give out the air conditioners, the fans. Well, instead of everybody coming into the office, you know, and picking those up, we tried to just do a one-time deal, and we just did it as a drive-through. And so everybody got to stay in their cars. All they had to do was drive through. You know, we assessed, they had to fill out, you know, a little thing that, you know, just told us some basic information so we knew how they cooled their house, how they heated their house, you know, and then we were able to, you know, load up the materials in their cars for them. And we, it was all done outside. The staff were all in masks. But again, it was just something where we can still get the needs out there to the people, but tried to limit their exposure and, you know, and them having to come to us. And we understand there's still some that, you know, don't have transportation. And whenever that's the case, you know, we do everything we can to try to, you know, get it delivered to them whenever possible.
Thank you, Ms. Oberly. I just have one follow-up question concerning that came to mind while you were some of the things that you were listing. You mentioned that the most needy families, a lot of them are on TANF, and there, and you mentioned also a relaxing of the regulations and requirements for such programs. Do you happen to know how long the regulations will be relaxed, where more people would be able to qualify? Can you give me some information on that?
Well, on that program in particular, they didn't lack how you qualified. They allowed us to up payments during the pandemic, during, you know, the shutdown, we were able to. And then they also allowed us to kind of waive some of those participation due to COVID, because on TANF, they're required to do so many hours of participation. But if we can't have them leave their homes, or, you know, we can't have them come up and do, you know, resume building, they couldn't apply for jobs because everything was shut down. So, you know, luckily the funding agency, they realized that. So, you know, they've been very lenient on how we can report that, and they're giving some allowances on that. Now, in the other program, our CSBG funds, which funds our CWASUB program, they actually have upped the income guidelines, where we used to be on 125% poverty guideline. They've actually raised it to 200%, and they're allowing us to do that for the remainder of this fiscal year and next fiscal year. So we were lucky with that. That has been the only funding agency that has allowed us to actually raise the income guidelines, though.
Okay. Thank you very much. So now I've got another question that came to mind. Could you give us a number of how many families you have on TANF?
Right now, our TANF caseload is about, I want to say 9 to 10 families. About 7 of those are caregiver only. So it's grandparents, aunts, uncles, you know, taking care of other children.
And then three of them are probably just regular, you know, TANF families. We've been very fortunate now with everything kicking off due to CARES that a lot of our clients that have been coming in, we've been able to put on workforce. So we have many clients now that are, you know, assisting out at Bird Creek. We've had several helping with food distribution on the food box giveaways. So our first option is always if we can get them to work, we're going to put them to work first. It helps them. It helps the community. It helps the programs. They're not having to hire temporary work. They can use our workers. All that's funded by federal money. So it saves our tribal dollars, especially in those tribally funded programs. So we've been very fortunate that all these projects are going on right now and that there's been a lot of spaces and that they're safe enough, especially with the outside work, that we're able to place multiple clients there.
Okay, so what is the norm? What is the average that you normally have on TANF? Is it usually higher than the 10 or so families?
No, for about the past year, it was probably averaging around 5 to 6.
Okay, and then the other programs, there's a couple other questions. The GA assistance program, how many do you assist there?
Right now, and like I said, that's been the main one. All of those clients, we have been able to find at least temporary workplaces. So we've been able to get them all off of GA, and they're actually workforce clients right now, and they're all placed. So soon as they've been able to come in, we've been able to find a place for them or find a temporary position for them, and we've been able to put them to work. So right now, we don't have any on GA. They have all closed because they're all gainfully employed right now.
Okay. And then the workforce career development, is that the same?
Yes. It's all under the 477 umbrella, so it's all one big pot of money. So all these clients, that's why I say it comes out of the same funding stream. So whether they're getting a check to just sit on GA or whether they're working, you know, we would much rather have them working because they're going to get a much better paycheck. You know, the GA assistance is very minimal. So we always want to try to get them as, you know, as much assistance as possible. And that's typically, you know, on the workforce and trying to get in place somewhere.
Okay. And I'm really not trying to put you on the spot with this, but you said that the GA, all the people that have the GA assistance are now gainfully employed. Do you have a ballpark number of because that's a positive, you know, statistic.
It is kind of on the spot because I don't have that in front of me, but I'm going to ballpark say we've got probably about 15 active right now.
So, okay, that's great. And so, all right. Thank you very much. I was actually a recipient of TANF many years ago, and so that's why I am interested in these programs. And for our most needy people, I was one of them. And I was fortunate enough to be assisted by TANF while I was in college.
It is a great program. It is a big help. And just kind of give you further explanation, we didn't expect the TANF rate to rise just yet, just because if they were getting unemployment and due to the extra amount they were getting unemployment, that was knocking them out of the eligibility for TANF. We were actually expecting those numbers to go up once the unemployment and the extra benefits start, you know, diminishing and going down, which we started seeing this month. So we do anticipate to get more TANF families, but I think during this, there has been so much thrown into the unemployment, they actually made more on unemployment, so we weren't able to put them on our program. So, I mean, that was kind of the reasoning that we didn't really see those numbers go up yet.
Yes, understood.
Unemployment. Lemon?
Yes, ma'am. Go right ahead, Speaker Pratt.
Right. Thank you. To follow up on that, just curious. That's a really high employment rate for your client. So that's really good to find everyone a spot. But you don't have it that many clients right now, which is also good. However, as you stated that, you know, there could be, it's a difficult time for everyone. And so I'm just curious. I know that a lot of times there are return TANF clients, and so they know about the program, but how do you possibly get the word out do you advertise? And if so, how do you do that in order to kind of let people know that that program is available, because a lot of times there's even times people can work and still qualify, depending on, you know, how they're set up or caretakers or et cetera. So how do you advertise your program?
Ms. Oberle? Did we lose Ms. Oberle? Testing, testing. Ms. Oberle?
Oh, I'm sorry. I was talking away and nobody was hearing me.
Okay.
Am I on now?
Yes, go right ahead.
Okay, sorry. All of our programs, yes, they are on our website, but we also have brochures, little pamphlets that talk about each one of our programs, kind of, you know, just the basics, you know, what it does, what it takes to qualify. Like, so typically we would go to almost most of the community events. We also hosted a lot of events. That's been a little difficult just here recently. Our biggest method of actually is referrals, and a lot of that is because we operate so many of the other programs. So we have a little spot on there that, you know, if you come in and you apply for energy assistance, that's one of the first things. If they don't have, you know, if they're not showing an employment or they have an employment number that's low, we automatically send them an application for our 477 program. Same thing with the CWAS UB program. When they come in and we see these families and they've got large families, you know, but the lower income, the same thing. We automatically, you know, let them know about our program and send them applications. So that's been the most beneficial way for us identifying those needy families, is those that are already on our program, you know, that are already getting services and, you know, reaching out. So that's been the majority of how we get word out or how we get that. But otherwise, it's, you know, just trying to get our program information out there through other community events and online.
Carolyn, this is Alice. I have a question.
Yes, ma'am. Go ahead.
As we, you mentioned and you touched just a few minutes ago on your expectation on seeing that number go up, given benefits for unemployment coming to an end for a lot of people. I was just wondering, do you all work in conjunction with even like our clinic or county or even state individuals that are able to speak with people about just the stresses of what this new life is like, that people that are really having problems, because there are people that are used to struggling, and then there are people that are struggling right now that they're not used to this way of life, of struggling how to pay their bills. And they've been on unemployment, and because our unemployment is so high, a lot of people aren't hiring. And if they are, they could be making significantly less. Whereas, you know, or I mean, basically like a quarter of the income that they're used to making. And I'm just wondering, like, if it's about the people that are utilizing your services, their well-being in terms of mental health. Are you all able to talk to people about that, about where they might be able to seek resources to talk about any issues that they may be having?
For our 477 program, we are not the counselors, and we are not trained in that area. However, we do, when they do their initial assessments and they come in, we go through a long list and they talk to them about, you know, what are the barriers, you know, what are the issues, you know, how can we help? And that is something on there that we can look at. And if it's, you know, if they say that that's a need, that is something that we can assist with, either with the referral, or we can, you know, sometimes we can refer within Osage Nation, or we can also assist in payment of an outside counselor if that's something that they, you know, express to us as being a need.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Uncle Russellman. Good Fox. I need to follow up on that one last bit there, Jennifer, if you don't mind. When you said you can
as a one option that you would have is to pay for an outside counselor. Is that like a series of appointments, or is it just like an initial appointment? Because, and the reason I ask that and the rationale behind it is because, you know, I started my career in behavioral health as a nurse, and one of the biggest obstacles or barriers that you run into with people that are having emotional or some behavioral health issues, is that yes, they may go to the initial appointment, but the follow-up, which is where the continued follow-up, which is where a lot of the work is done in assisting people to learn new coping mechanisms, happens, and the continued follow-up. So is it just the initial visit, or is it an actual series of visits? Thank you.
We don't put any kind of limitation. I mean, obviously, if there's a way for us to do, hook them up, give them a good referral that wouldn't cost us, we look for those options first. But if not, we look at it as whatever is going to help get them over that barrier. So if that barrier is they really need these services, then we don't look at it as a one-time service. Or it's whenever that counselor, and we do a lot more with PATH and the drug counseling, we see a lot more of that than the other type. But typically they do it until that counselor says they're good, or until they sign off on it. Again, that we don't step in that role, and that's not for us to determine, hey, you just need one session, or I think you need five. If we let the professionals tell us what they need and how long it's going to take, we're just here to make sure that that's available to them. And if they want to, pursue it, that's great. If they don't, I can't force them to see it. But again, we're not going to limit them. That's not, that's not our expertise. We will follow the guidelines of the experts on that stuff.
Yes, thank you very much. I just was trying to understand how it all works. And so I wouldn't expect you guys to say that, here you go and we'll kick you out the door. I was just, I was wanting to make sure that they get to have follow-up if need be, because as you mentioned with the task, which is happens to do with an illicit type of addiction type of problem and that type of counseling, the stigma that goes along with just behavioral health and mental well-being, unfortunately, is something that we don't, as a society, and I'm speaking, of course, in my experiences, we as a society tend to brush that off as not part of a holistic approach of being well. And so I'm so happy to hear that you got that your department refers people for assistance when an individual is in need of behavioral health assistance. So thank you.
Lemon, we cannot hear you at this time.
Well, that's because I muted my microphone. So thank you very much. Okay, let's move on then. If we don't, did I miss anybody? Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Frazier. Yes, sir.
Yes, ma'am. This is just something I was noticing while we were looking over the budget. It looks like IDC on this budget is being charged at about a 52.5% rate. That's something I've asked the controller about during this meeting, and hopefully we can get that figured out and I can report back. Just wanted to make you all aware.
Okay, Jordan, are you talking about the financial assistance budget?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Yes, ma'am. You are waiting to hear back from the controller. Is the controller on? I don't see her. Would someone from executive like to tackle this?
I think it's best to wait for word from the controller on this.
Okay.
All right, so we'll need to make note of that. And Jordan, will you just be sending out an email to us concerning that particular issue?
Yes, ma'am, I can do that.
I'd appreciate that very much. And if you can send it just to the entire Congress, please. Okay, great. Thank you so much. All right, are we ready to move on to HUD-VASH? And this also is Ms. Jennifer Oberle. And if you can pull up the tribal budget. And you have the floor, Ms. Oberle.
Thank you. We do have the HUD-VASH program. It is it's a federal program, and it is solely intended to help homeless veterans, you know, find home and get them self-sufficient and stable. It is a huge partnership that we have with the VA. Applicants actually have to go through the VA. They do all the vetting process, you know, get all that arranged. They're the ones that actually find them the locations. I kind of jokingly always say, you know, they do all the legwork, rewrite the checks for it. But the program, it's been a pilot program. It's very new. We were given 20 spots at the beginning. We have all 20 spots taken. We regularly keep it at the 20. Every once in a while, you know, we'll have one or two, you know, that kind of graduate out or become self-sufficient on their own. They get their, you know, their disability or they gain employment. And then once they're off the program, you know, then we're able to take a couple more on. But it comes sporadically. It's not a consistent yearly budget that comes in. So we use that entire federal money to go straight to those direct services. So therefore, we kind of supplement with the tribal just to help us do the administration of the program. So it's just a small portion of wages, some supplies, some space costs. It's just the very minimum we have to operate the program. Everything else, all that federal money, we put directly into the direct services for those veterans.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Oberle. Any questions from the committee?
Or members? Dallas, I have one.
Yes, ma'am, go right ahead.
How do you all advertise that, Jennifer?
Again, we do have that on our website, but we don't advertise that program because they don't apply through us. And we thought it would be confusing for people, you know, if we were to put it out there, because they actually have to go through the VA. And the VA are the ones that give us the clients. Once they've done all that, the background and legwork on that, all we do is we just verify that they're Native American in our area. And again, we sign the contract with, you know, wherever they're renting, and we pay the checks. But they can't apply through us, so that's why we don't advertise it that much.
All right. Thank you.
So in, thank you, Congresswoman Goodfuck. So in following that, you wouldn't know if there's a waiting list then. Is that so?
No, right now, like I said, we have, you know, the 20 spots. We work with the VA, you know, out of the Tulsa region, but we're not the only tribe that has it. So they do have, you know, other programs. We just know we're allowed 20 spots and we fill ours up. And then if we have a vacancy, he goes and finds two more clients for us and we fill them back up.
Thank you. Okay, committee, the floor is open for any questions concerning the HUD-VASH tribal budget.
Chair Lemon, I have a question.
Yes, Speaker Pratt, go right ahead.
Okay, so if the referrals are coming from the VA, and I understand they have to apply through there, but do they have a requirement to live in Osage County or no?
No, the grant, the HUD-VASH grant is actually Osage County and all the surrounding counties that touch it. So this program goes into, you know, Washington, Tulsa, Kay, so all the ones that surround Osage County.
That's what you're administering is the surrounding counties?
Yes, Osage County and all the ones that touch us, not including Kansas.
Okay. So perhaps since they're coming from the Tulsa office, the Tulsa VA, because I was thinking, okay, what if there were a couple of homeless veterans right here in very surrounding area, they may not know about it. And so I am just thinking, I mean, that's another reason for a need for continuing veteran services. through, but would you help them? So in the event it was, you know, Osage Nation has HUDVASH, because I know it's, you know, been advertised when it was awarded. So would you all assist them? And I realize you don't help them, but they don't apply through you, but would you refer them and forward them on to the VA?
Oh, yes, so, yes, absolutely.
It will be advertised to our local veterans.
Right. If we know about them, obviously we also put that on our website. We put, you know, the information up. We put the VA's information up so that they know who they have to contact to start the process. But again, you know, if it's someone that walks into our office and we identify that, you know, we have a daily working relationship with Paul Lawson. He's the VA rep that we work with. So we call them immediately, but like, you know, hey, and, you know, get them hooked up, you know, as quick as possible.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Speaker Pratt. Okay, committee. Any further questions or comments?
I could just make a comment, Chair.
Yes, ma'am.
Just, you know, kudos to Ms. Oberly and the work she does. That's why I'm so interested in her statistics. And she runs a lot of programs, and she's where I send everybody. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Agree. Thank you, thank you for Jennifer for everything that you do, you and your staff.
And thank you very much. It is greatly appreciated, and we thank all the support, you know, that you guys have given us and allowing us to do what we do.
Okay, great. So we are at the point now where if there aren't any further questions on the CHR budget, the constituent services budget, and the HUDVASH budget, does the committee want to move forward with having the minutes note that we reviewed those three budgets?
Yes, yes. Chair.
Yes.
Okay. Let's go ahead and do that in motion form then, if that's okay. I mean, if that's what the committee feels would be the best way to wrap that up. So
yes,
the chair,
I'm looking for my.
I can. The chair would entertain a motion for the minutes to reflect that the Health and Social Services Committee has reviewed ONCA 2076 Section 10, CHR Section 11, Constituent Services, Section 37, HUDVASH.
Thank you. Yes, so moved.
So second.
Okay. There's a motion on the floor with a second. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please say yes.
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 Any opposed?
Yes. Say no.
Motion carries. As far as the, thank you, committee, as far as section 24, which is the financial assistance, if the committee is fine, I'll just leave it here on the, and I'll put it on a further agenda when we get the explanation for from the controller. Will that suffice?
Yes.
Yes, ma'am.
Great. All right, committee. Thank you very much. Now we're on to section 32, which is the health benefit fund. And we do have attachments for the health benefit fund. We had a little bit of discussion yesterday, and I just want to open the floor for continued discussion. We do have the budget in front of us that has been submitted by executive, and please correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Zahn, but there is a change in Group J, Direct Assistance, Part D, a change from last year, where the Part D premium that the Osage individuals pay now has been added to this budget for the constituents to have no premium with Part D if this budget is approved.
No copay. That's correct.
Oh, it's a copay. I'm sorry. I thought it was a premium. Okay, committee. The floor is yours, or any other members of Congress.
Chair, this is Paula. I know we were in discussion yesterday and wanting to look at several things. I'm still trying to figure out why the revolving fund looks like it does. And have been going through some of the reports, and then I shared a couple of the reports out to the rest of the committee to show them what I was looking at. And I know I did file a piece of legislation today, which would talk about the futures of the benefits. I guess what I'm trying to say is we've all got some ideas of how we can structure this to keep the keep it in check. I keep using the word economics, the economics of the nation, to keep those in check. But as far as the budget itself for this year that they have proposed, I really don't have a problem with the numbers that they've proposed. I think they fall in line to what we looked at last year and where we felt the shortfall was last year, which is why we added the $4.5 million, I think. And as we can have been reported to us now through looking at these documents, it looks like they're going to be using all that we appropriated last year. And we've got to deal with the problem with the prior year shortfalls now too. But as far as moving forward with this next year, I think that that's all we're going to have. And I know there was some discussion, somebody else might pipe in here, there was some discussion about the shortfalls for the prior years. But right now, I don't know what we can do about them.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Stabler. I did receive the emails that you forwarded, and that, of course, that you were speaking of yesterday with revolving fund balance. I too feel confused, knowing that the liability is not funded. So, if the committee doesn't mind, I do have a question for Mr. Zahn. Or if you guys have questions, I can wait till the end. Okay, so I'm going to go ahead then. Thank you. The revolving fund, Mr. Zahn. So The balance that's in the revolving fund right now, help me understand the balance that's in there versus the unfunded liability of the rollover.
Are you referencing a particular report?
Well, we have this report that of the revolving fund balances, but I'm still trying to understand how we even have a balance in there, because it's been underfunded always since we started the rollover. That's where my confusion, I scratch my head thinking, you know, how do we have any funds in there unless it is 2020 funds that we appropriated last year?
And there was 12 and a half 2020 funds that went into that fund.
Yes.
And I mean, the unfunded liability of a rollover is not per se in, like, it's not in an accounting system. It's just, it's on a report saying this is what you have available. And as you spend it, then we start taking from that balance. So, I mean.
Chair, this is Paula.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so the projection that we have for the rest of 2020 pans out. The revolving fund is showing over $8 million in there. The third party is forecasting that it will take almost $8 million if everybody fulfills all of their cards balances. So that's a good sign. That's a good thing. That's a good report on that piece. But what I'm concerned about are those rollover years, which have basically equal less than zero when you put the two together. And so that's the liability that I'm referring to as the big question in the air. And I know that this company took over just this last year, didn't they, Jason? Or was it the year before?
No, ma'am. They started 1/1/2020.
Yes. And so they've done a great job of compiling information and researching it, but we've still got those, well, the back 2 years and I'm concerned about. And we don't know, and they don't know.
Right. I mean, I guess, I mean, I can talk to them and try to get a report to where we can see the various buckets and where we're at of what the liability is. And then we can just, I mean, we just have to constantly monitor it because you never know when people are obviously going to use their card. They are doing it correctly, unlike previous vendors that, you know, first in, first out. Mm-hmm. First in, first out. So any time I would swipe my card, for example, this year, if I had any 17, that it would go off a 17.
Right.
Or 18. Mm-hmm. So I can request something like that to try to get a better snapshot of the three buckets of liability. And then we can weigh that versus what we actually have in cash money and then determine on what's unfunded.
I would appreciate that greatly, Jason.
That would be helpful. That would be helpful, Chair.
Sure, yes. No problem.
Madam Chair.
Yes, please go ahead.
Yes, this is Congressman Big Horse. And this would be a question for Jason also. Say we make it through the rest of this year and everything is kind of stays normal as, you know, the last 3 or 4 years trending. Then next year, there'll be an amount that'll drop off, correct?
That is correct, sir.
Okay. Do you know what that amount is?
I don't know the exact amount. It's roughly around 700,000. I think the last couple of years, 1 year was like 680, and then I think the other one was like 725. So we're roughly trending around $750,000 that falls off, so to speak.
Okay. All right. Thank you, sir.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Congressman Big Horse. So that's the bucket, one of the buckets that you were speaking of earlier, of the liability that we have.
Yes, ma'am. So you have the three buckets, the first one being the current year, and then the two other ones being the two previous years. So when, for example, right now we have 2019 and 18. So when we hit 2021, 18 goes away.
So
for that liability in 18. So that's, you know, it's not cash money. It's just, it's, you know, unfunded liability that we no longer have hanging over our heads.
Right. We don't have an obligation at that point in time.
Yes, ma'am. That's correct.
So that's why I would really like to see those numbers from our new administrator. I think Congresswoman Stabler would like to say something. Go right ahead.
Thank you. Yes, and that's a perfect example. And that's what I was going to ask Jason. You're talking about $750,000 worth of credit or liability that is still in 2018, right?
No, normally with the way the rollover looks like, there's like usually like 4 million or 5 million in current year, sometimes 6, and then there's like 2 or 3 or 4 in the second year, and then the third year is normally under a million, or typically that's what we've seen.
Okay, in credits.
Yes.
In credits, because that's why I'm concerned, because according to the revolving fund balances, there's only $264,000 in 2018. And 2019's already running in the negative. And so that's the analysis that we need. And I'm not 100% certain that these revolving balances are accurate, but that's what they're reporting to us that they are. But I'd like to see the information from the administrators.
Yes, ma'am. I'm typing an email right now. We'll get a snapshot of what our three buckets look like.
Okay, that's great. Chair, we might continue to postpone this until we really have all the information in front of us, unless you'd like us to go ahead and report out the budget for this year.
Thank you, Congresswoman Stabler. It's the will of the committee, so anybody else have, I want everybody to have a chance to weigh in, and anybody who's on Congress a chance to weigh in, however you all want to move forward.
Chairwoman, this is Jody.
Congresswoman, second speaker, please go ahead.
Just a comment. If the committee would consider, I think we probably ought to not make any movement on the health benefit fund just yet until we get the reports. And I would, as a congressperson, feel better if we just keep the discussion going until we get numbers. And Jason, I was just gonna, I know you may not be looking at the revolving fund balances that we were reported.
I am not.
Okay, so that might help if we all have the same documents in front of each other, and so that when we meet again, we could revisit and we're all looking at the same information, and we make sure we have the controller and the treasurer on to explain the revolving fund. Because I can see where Congresswoman Stabler's got concerned, because there's no description next to the year. It just says the health benefit fund. And so without a description on the revolving fund, we really don't look, we don't know what we're looking at, because right now the fund says we have 8 million. So why would we even appropriate dollars to that fund if we've got that amount in the revolving fund available? It looks like it doesn't even need to be funded.
Right, that's when actuality, we have probably like a $16 million liability hanging over our head.
Exactly, and so I just think we ought to revisit it one more time, Chair, if your committee would consider that, and that we all look at the same information so we can make good decisions. That's my comment, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Congressman Rebord. So without objection, I will postpone Section 32, the Health Benefit Fund, to the call of the Chair.
So moved.
Madam Chair, may I make a comment?
Okay, hang tight, guys. I think I heard Congresswoman Goodfox make the motion. Did I hear a second?
Yes, there was a discussion.
Yeah, for discussion. Yeah, Congresswoman, go right ahead.
Someone was trying to.
Was that Mr. Zahn?
Jason, yeah, I almost said Congressman Zahn. Yes, Jason, I just wanted to see, maybe make a request. When we put the next agenda out, could we label it Health Benefit Revolving Fund? And then I'll make sure the account, treasurer and controller sees that, so they'll get on and we can get it discussed.
Absolutely. I would love to work with you. That's it.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So, I'll list health benefit fund as the section that that the section of the budget, and then I will list health benefit revolving fund discussion.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so we do have a motion on the floor. Is that correct, Madam Chair? I mean, Madam Clerk.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And so all those in favor of the motion to postpone the health benefit fund budget to the call of the chair, please say yes.
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 Carries. Thank you. I do want to ask the committee real quick if everyone received the email from Mr. Wygant concerning the budget that we discussed yesterday.
Yes, I did. Yes,
I did. Okay.
Great. So I'm going to go ahead and get that put on probably the next agenda so we can work through it, because it does look like we did have the corrected budget in front of us. Is that what you all understand also?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, great. Anything further from the committee at this time?
Motion to adjourn.
There's a motion. There's a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, please say yes.
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 Thank you, committee. Motion carries. Everybody have a wonderful weekend. We are adjourned.